Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Why you made me do this? Man, yeah.
I love you, Bobby.
Yeah.
Hey, V.
Fly out the city, fly out my niggas that's always been with me. Fly out my wardrobe, got Louis and Finney. Crabs in the jet, got me feeling like Lenny. No disrespect, these in quarters and pennies. Big bags, hundreds and fifties, no twenties. Jet lag ties, my eyes feeling heavy. Been that one running shit in my city, yeah. Ayy, pass that shit just like a physical. Catch either that or it's digital. What I do now is so critical. Shawty got balls, but I know she ain't lyrical. She wanna fucking get spiritual. Need me a whip where the top is invisible. Or a bitch where the top is incredible. Ski mask, feeling like Rey Mysterio. Need that in every scenario. For whoever like playing the side like a stereo. I won't go live, but you hear on the radio. Me on my fuck, you go crazy. Flow make her say who like she carry. Or I won't do shit till you pay me, bro. They won't say shit cause they hate me, bro. Fuck it, they gon' have to face it, though. Erase it cause all of this.
All of this cap or no capping. I'm in the trap doing back.
I'm in the trap.
These niggas fake, they be active. I'm on the field, I want static. I'm in the city, she calling me daddy. I'm a big dog in the streets like my daddy. Too many racks, don't fit in a fanny. Sweet, never been to the county. All of this cap or no capping. I'm in the trap doing back. These niggas fake, they be acting. I'm on the field, I want static. I'm in the city, she calling me daddy. I'm a big dog in the streets like my daddy. Too many racks, don't fit in a fanny. These niggas sweet, never been to the county. Ayy, stunt on a bitch like all of this ice got my wrist tight. She used to say get my shit right. Now that same bitch on my dick like I can never fold, nigga, yeah right. Got my mind full of gold, get my head right. Nigga hide in a hole like it's jet light. Free my bros at the jam doing vet time. I cannot trust none of these bitches. I gotta get to these riches. Lot on my plate, used to wash all the dishes. Blood on my face from them nuts being vicious. I cannot wait till I bust me a mission. Met her on Tinder, treat me like a dinner. Girl, I'm a winner, I ain't no pretender. I know they be capping, I'm cold like the winner.
They capping.
All of this cap or no capping. I'm in the trap doing
back. I'm in the trap.
These niggas fake, they be active. I'm on the field, I want static. I'm in the city, she calling me daddy. I'm a big dog in the streets like my daddy. Too many racks, don't fit in a fanny. These niggas sweet, never been to the county. All of this cap or no capping. I'm in the trap doing back. These niggas fake, they be active. I'm on the field, I want static. I'm in the city, she calling me daddy. I'm a big dog in the streets like my daddy. Too many racks, don't fit in a fanny. You niggas sweet, never been to the county.
And we are now tuned in on episode 446 of the livest and most direct in your face hip hop show, Off the Cuff Radio. I am your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin. Show sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing, Buddy Boy Entertainment, Fleetwood and the Cotton Pickers, Jesse's Boutique, and Core Financial. I got my host, T-Max, with the facts in the building.
What it do, y'all. Another Friday night of fantastic mess. It's Off the Cuff in the building. King Eric, the head pilot, and myself, the co-pilot. Shout out to our co-host on Straight Outta Man, it's Sandman, and Lady Chinchilla So Illa. We are live and direct. And King, once again, we got another magnificent show tonight that is doing the 305, who keeps it live. So proud. We talking about that badass MIA all day. Shout out to Trop Da Vinci of MMG for tonight's guest. We did. We also had one of his peoples that's opening up this week, Nick Garcia. And tonight's guest is one of the most magnificently, consummately creative minds in terms of crafting some of the most thought-provoking and witty kind of wondrous hip-hop, doing it so fly down the state of Florida. We are so happy to interview him. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, the man who's got us sweet jumper all day, keeping it in the play, John Austin. What it do, man?
Hey, man, how's everything?
What's going on with you, man? How you?
Nah, I'm doing good, man. How you guys doing?
We're good, man. John, this is great. It took us a while to make this happen, but we finally got you on, man, and we're so happy to, man. What's going on with you?
I've been working, man. You already know the motions, man. I'm happy to be a part of this. Glad to be on your show, man. Really appreciate it.
We appreciate you. Look, King and myself. Yeah, go ahead, King. Go ahead.
It was a grind, but we made it happen, man.
Facts. Yeah, man. Big facts.
Yeah, man. John, is anybody, you know, who comes on our show, we always make it a point to do our research and our homework in reference to, you know, the music they put out. And checking out your YouTube channel, man, your shit is not only extensive, but it's excellent. And definitely, look, if hard work was a person and perseverance was a personification, you are that individual who is always putting in that work, man. I mean, you got some heat online for real,
appreciate
man.
That. Appreciate that, man. I really do.
Definitely. So I guess as always, you know, like we do about this time, I guess this is where we get into it, man. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, how you started out, where you represent, all of it. We got a couple hours. Let's get it.
Let's do it, man. Well, I'm from Miami, Florida, born and raised, in like the Color Bay, Kendall side of Miami. I'm 27 now. I started making music around 8-9 years ago, so I was probably like 18 years old. And I've just been rocking since, bro. Just trying to tap in with myself a little more day by day and kind of get a gist of what the people want and what they want from me, you know. So musical influences?
Yeah.
Growing up, I wasn't like presenting hip hop like when I was young. I was like listening to like Prince, Michael Jackson, Marvin Gaye, a lot of people, bro. Three Dog Night, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh,
yeah, I was like, because as a jit, like, my mom would play that in the car. She'd be playing that around the house and stuff. So I was like, I don't know if you guys know Music Choice. That'd be playing like on the TV.
Yeah,
my mom used to play that a lot. So, yeah, I used to be on that. And then, like, growing a little older, she married my sister's dad. my little sister. They had a kid, and that became my sister. And he gave me some CDs. He gave me The Dog Father. He gave me All Eyes on Me. He gave me a lot of stuff. So I was just, when I heard about that, I started tapping in. Then I heard about Eminem, 50 Cent. Did my research on them and stuff. Then it came across Lil Wayne, Whole Cash Money, and then the rest is history. Just listening to a lot of people since then.
Man, well, one thing about it, John, listening to who your influences were, I mean, of course, you know, I mean, when you said Three Dog Night, I mean, everybody knows about them in terms of one of their most famous songs, you know, Mama Told Me Not to Come. And of course,
yes.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, you know, Prince and Michael, you know, these are, you know, two universally beloved and transcendent figures in all of music history. So obviously the foundation for your influences was very well laid in terms of, you know, who you, you know, had your early introduction to. You know, God bless your mother for it in terms of putting you on the right path. And, of course, you know, with your dad in terms of what he would put you on to, of course, with Snoop Dogg, you know, him, everybody else. Obviously, John, growing up in Miami, Florida, born and raised, the hip-hop history there, you know, DJ, you know, Clay D, you know, 2 Live Crew, just to name a few, yeah. You know, DJ Magic Mike, you know, this is, you all have a very, very, very distinguished and defined history yourselves there. You know, most notably recently, you know, with Slip and Slide Records, you know, Trina, you know, Trick Daddy. You know, it's extensive out there, man. What was it like in terms of really for all of these influences? Because obviously your introduction to hip-hop came a little later on. What was it like in terms of really being able to sit down and start listening to them and then really deciding, like, yo, this is what I really want to do in terms of, you know, doing music?
To be honest, like, in high school, I was just tapped in with my boys. Like, we'll kick it, do stuff, you know, vibe, and then, like, I started, like, trying to figure out how I could get my sense across, because sometimes I felt like I was misunderstood because I probably, like, explained too much, or, like, I want to say things correctly, because you know how there's those people that, like, you know what they mean, but they're, like, saying not too much, but they're not using the right word together, so that person saying it might be like, damn, like, I'm not saying it how I want to say it. Like, growing up, I dealt with that. Sometimes I do as well, like, nowadays, but I feel like music is, like, straightforward. I can literally write down what I'm feeling, make it rhyme, and then just find a beat or make a beat and, like, put it together and, like, really, like, tap into what I'm trying to say and how I feel about certain aspects and shit like that. So I started doing that in a little high school. I just felt like that was my way of, like, having people understand what I'm trying to say, what I feel, what's going on at the moment. Because when I make music, I want to talk about what's going on now, you know, because that's, like, timeless to me and I guess for everyone else. Like, when you're talking about the now and just as life goes on, like, the artists feel like the fans are growing with them because they get to understand, like, oh, when I was listening to him, he was going through stuff at this time of his life. And then, like, years later, all right, he's at this stage. And then, like, in the future, oh, he's in this stage, you know, so I just feel like that's the best way to, like, get my point across.
Definitely.
I see that also as some sort of a challenge, being that we live in a time where everybody can be a producer these days just off of SoundCloud or Fruity Loops. Like, does it make it hard for you to stand out, you know?
Not really. It depends, because it depends on what you want from it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're coming from the heart and the soul, like, you're always going to stand out because you got your own little story to tell, and everyone's story is different. So if you could just approach it in a different way that you feel like could present it well and it grabs the people's ears and attention, like, you're always going to stand out from that sort. But if you're trying in a way where, like, oh, I'm going to do this because it's going to, yeah, there's some things that add on to it, but, like, if that's your main focus of just doing things to, like, get people's attention, that's not longevity, I feel. It's pretty much, like, just a short little, short road, you know? That's just me.
Yeah. And one thing about it, John, I think is when you're making music for your area, you know, it's always important because you have to, you really want to be able to connect with your hometown in terms of, I mean, we look at Rick Ross, you know, once again, shout out to M&G, him, Jeter K, Whole Slab, you know, the whole crew, man, you know.
Right.
And he really, definitely, man, and he definitely bought, you know, and going into, you know, the next generation of it, from what I said earlier about, you know, Trina and Trick, you know, he was definitely, you know, coming into the mid-2000s, you know, he was really becoming, you know, that voice out there. I mean, if we look at neighborhoods, we look at, you know, places like, you know, Overtown, you know, Coconut Grove, you know, West Grove, you know what I'm saying? Liberty City, you know, Carroll City, you know, you all have I mean, when you look at Little Haiti, you know, Little Havana, it's like, tell us just about how music, you know, encompasses so many different diverse cultures and people there.
In a sense, you could say it brings more flavor to it because it's the vast majority of people here in Miami when it comes to all those places that you mentioned. So it gives you a little insight of what everyone is and what they're about and where they're from. So you could say it gives it flavor, and you could implement that into what you're doing in music. And it's a whole culture out here. It's you get a taste of everything, I feel like.
Especially now with Miami. It seems like Miami and Atlanta are competing for what's considered to be the Hollywood of the South. Like, you know, you got people flocking to either those two areas at the moment. So we see a renaissance going on between those two cities.
Hey, which cities?
Atlanta and Miami.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They're two different, two opposites, but similar in its own ways.
Yeah. And one thing about it, too, man, we would be remiss, you know, King and John, if we didn't mention on the show, of course, because not only from the music perspective and the diverse cultures, we cannot forget them Bad Boys. The University of Miami, they basically have been as swag as we know it. I mean, you all have just been lit for years, man. I mean, so basically you were just born into it. What's the city like just in terms of the scene, in terms of just being around it and having all of that influence, you know, what you create in terms of, you know, really bringing it together for you?
It's a lot to take in. I'm not gonna lie to you. So much going on in Miami, 24/7. If it's from down south where Homestead Kendall is to up north where downtown and Brickell is, it's a lot to take in. There's so many people, interesting people. You know, it's a lot. It's a city. It's a cocaine city. You know what I'm saying? From back in the 80s to now, and you could say 70s as well. It's a lot. It's a lot out here. Miami is a fun place to be, I'm not gonna lie, and it could be overwhelming too. There's a lot of crazy things that go on. Like, you go to downtown Brickell and stuff, it's nice places, but if you go to Overtown and stuff like that, like, you know what I'm saying, it's two different type of worlds, you could say. Like, I tell people a lot, Miami and Florida are two different places. Like, the whole Florida and Miami are two different places. It's crazy.
Yeah. And when you speak on the history of it, John, when you talk about cocaine, I mean, we got to, because on Off the Cuff, we always try to give our listeners as much history as we can for them to understand the context. When, you know, people got to understand in terms of, you know, Griselda Blanco, you know, the cocaine cowboys, all that was going on, you know, which
wow.
really would make
Scarface
era. Yeah, exactly, King, the Scarface era, yeah. Of course,
yep.
you know, Brian De Palma, yeah, of course, Brian De Palma, you know, who directed it, Oliver Stone, shout out to the legend. He was also one of the guys that helped write that screenplay for it. That was in 83. You know, Miami Vice, the TV show, would come in 84. So this was pretty much during that time, really reflecting a lot of it in terms of what was happening. Now, you came along later on, you know, in terms of, you know, coming into the world. But what were the stories that you heard about, you know, when you were younger about what was going on in that era before you with convertible guys for like, you know, Convertible Burt, Big Ike, you know, all of those individuals?
In Miami? Well,
yes, sir.
To be honest, I haven't, like, after, like, tapping with that again, but, like, not much, to be honest, because I guess the people I hung around with, they really didn't put me on, so I had to do some research, but, you know, like,
understood.
Not much, to be honest.
Understood. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what's... And,
no,
you
much
know, what's
respect,
also,
for sure.
Powerful, you know, what I observe with your music is that your music had that style where it catches the night scene, like the club scene. You know how to balance those anthems, street anthems, and
yep.
create bangers.
Well, yeah, nah, facts, Miami. That it all started with the bass, you know? The bass music in Miami back in the day was that thing. It was all driven by bass, so like with the trunks rattling and the speakers in the clubs anywhere, it just it rattles. So like fast forward to now, like implementing all the melodies and all that stuff, you bring those two together, it just it creates something special. And
yeah, because listen to your
yeah,
stuff
so like,
you know, I did some of the yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you know, listen to some of your stuff before going on air, it makes it like, yo, it puts you on a detour to Miami because you know what it looks like. It's just bringing that regional sound back. Whereas you got today, a lot of people just trying to mimic that for sales. You bringing that balance back to where everything sounds regional. And that's needed.
Oh, appreciate it. I appreciate that. Appreciate that. Yeah, I try to just create based off, like I said, what I'm feeling. And I get a lot of influences now, you know, by like... some underground artists, mainstream artists. I try to, like, see what I like from them and I implement that to what I'm doing and, you know, try to create the best work I can for the people that are listening and for myself.
And one thing about it is this is a journey in terms of music. As you started really creating, what did you find in terms of being able to find your style, you know, in terms of, like, those early days in terms of like writing, just really figuring out, you know, which direction you wanted to go with it. Because as an artist coming into the game, it's what they call finding your voice. What was it like in terms
yeah.
of those early writing sessions, of those early, you know, just focusing on which way you really want, how you wanted to express yourself?
Well, in the beginning, I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't happy with my work. Looking at it now, but also at the same time, I am because it's a lot of growth. But in the beginning, I was just writing, doing remixes, and a lot of like finding beats. And I was a big fan of Lil Wayne in high school, like when he dropped like Carter 3, Carter 4, like, and I had to go back and listen to all his other shit, 500 Degrees, and like. The way he'll put his words together and the way he'll just, like, flow on the beat and just his wordplay caught my ear a lot. So I felt like, damn, if he's doing that, let me see if I could do that. So I started playing with it. I wasn't that good. But I just kept going. I'll write journals. I got, like, 5, 6, 7 journals put away just writing, like, filled out. Like, I write on the phone now and mostly freestyle, but... When I was writing, I was covering up the journal a lot, and just trying to see how I could put it together. But then when I started going to school, I went to school, I think, around 2012. I don't know what year, but I went to SA Institute for Audio Engineering and Music Production because I wanted to take it serious, but I didn't want to I wanted to give myself a head start. So I decided to go to school, and they gave us a laptop. That's where I met Chop Da Vinci. And just started fucking with them, just creating beats, creating sounds, and just learning from people around me. And when that happened, I started creating based off original work. And then when that started happening, I started, like, trying to find new flows and all this stuff. And then listening to other artists, you hear their cadence and how they pronunciate certain things. And, like, it sets something off, where it's just like, okay, like, you can say things, but it's how you say it, and then the way you're saying it at certain parts of the verse, the third bar, the fourth bar, kind of switch up how you're saying it. It could be the same rhyme pattern, but kind of switch it up to give that unique feel, and with the beat and how the beat is, where the progression is in the beat. If you can match that with what you're saying, you can really hit them emotionally and in the feels. So and that will resonate to the fans and myself. So I was just like, when I started doing that, I started, like, thinking, like, okay, if I'm learning this, now it's time to really, like, tap into, like, getting the words right and really hitting it, like, where they're going to feel it. And started doing that. It started working. I'm still working on it. I'm satisfied, but I'm not content. So it's just continuous. I'm a student of the game. Just keep working and keep practicing, pretty much.
And you know what's dope about you bringing up Lil Wayne and, you know, pattering his come up was he came a long way. You know, when you hear him rapping as a kid, you know, from the hot days, you know, with the whole wobbly wobbly flow,
yeah.
And you heard him with the squad up. And you start seeing him, like, developing over the years and got better and better.
Yeah.
Now, and one thing about it, John, you know, because there's so many things that we got to touch on, because, you know, for where you started listening to Wayne, this is around the time, you know, him and Birdman came to Miami. You know, this is about the time, you know, some guy, you know, I think you heard of him, really started making a name, you know. Went by the name Beat Nova Kane, but now we know him as DJ
yep.
Khaled, you know. So it's like, yeah, so it's like this is where we're really kind of beginning to see, like, you know, what I was saying earlier, you know, in the show about, you know, Rick Ross and, you know, basically that, you know, that new wave coming in of already what was already there. But the fact is that Miami is known as New York South. Because, you know, of course, the city that never sleeps is always something to do. You know, shout out Club Live. You know, and when you look at, like I mentioned about the Miami Hurricanes earlier, when you got guys like, you know, Michael Irvin, you know, Russell Maryland, you know, of course, you know, the late, great Howard Schnellenberger that really got that dynasty off. You know, Jimmy Johnson, Dennis Erickson. You know, you have Craig Erickson. You know, the Blaze Brothers, Brian and Benny, you know, you had Al, you know, you got Edger and James, you know. I mean, the pedigree of the U football, you know, is so long and distinguished. We'll be here 5 hours talking about everything. I mean, when you look at basketball, you're talking about Darius Rice, the nephew of Jerry Rice. You're talking about Shane Larkin, you know, son of the baseball legend Barry Larkin. You know, Dan Levitard. You know, the, you know, journalist who went to, you know, my aunt, the U as well. You know, it's you all just have that it factor in terms of how, it's just in the city's DNA and everybody absorbs it. What you talked about in terms of the 808, you know, King and myself, you know, we grew up on, you know, Two Live Crew, you know, and then Magic Mike would come a little bit around that same time, a little bit after, you know, and with Bass, the Final Frontier and all that. And it's like where a lot of people thought of Bass as just being a whole bunch of noise, like you said, with the kicks and the thump. there was an art form to it. I don't think you all down there get the respect that you should for being instrumental not only in hip-hop, you know, history, because you all contributed a whole lot, but the style you gave, you know, you all were unabashedly about your city and how you put on, and you were proud to rep it no matter what nobody said.
Facts. Yeah, the 808s, it's, it went from just a thump to, like, now it's all melody. Now people just, now, not now, it's part of the beat, but it's always been, but more of a sense, it's driven by it. Now you could switch the pitches and do so much stuff with it. And going back in the days, it's that feel. And then you giving that people that feel that they want, it brings out the emotions that they might be hiding inside or that they want to showcase. And, like, for example, the baby, the 808s that he'd be using, that's the main part of his beat, you know? And that was kind of like, you could say, similarity to, like, same shit as Miami, you know what I'm saying? Like, gives it that feel.
Definitely. Now, once again, we have to prop for, you know, of course, you and Nick coming on this show. Great guy, you know, we interviewed him. When you and him first clicked up in school, what was that like? And, you know, how did you develop that friendship that would last, you know, so strong to this day?
We're just kicking it in class, and I was very, I wasn't to myself, but I had, like, a couple, like, people I was hanging out with, and he was to himself. Might have had a couple people he was chilling with, but we're just kicking it. We're working. We just want to record all the time. Like, there'll be projects. Like, there's one time we had a project to do. He came over the crib. I had a studio in my guest room. Not a studio, but, like, a little computer, like, desktop speakers and stuff. And, like, we had a project due the next morning, and we made music until 2 hours before the project was done. And then we're like, oh, shit, let's just finish this project. Like, we just wanted to work so much. And we went from, like, going, it's just crazy, pretty much, like, driving to North Miami Beach all the way down to where I live. That's, like, an hour away just to record and going half on, like, gas if you need it or, you know, just stuff. Like, we're just going through it. And I told him, I was like, bro, I got a studio. And when he heard about that, he's like, oh, for real, let me pull up. So he pulled up, and then it kicked it even more and more, and I was like, bro, do you want to do this with me? And he's like, hell yeah. We just started. The rest is history.
That's weird to have that type of bondship in it, man, because we've seen where success done broke off a lot of great friendships and groups. So to stay solid with an amount of people in this business, very rare, and it's also very commendable.
Yeah, no, it's bro, the guy, like, with all my heart, that's a brother to me, you know, like, before the music, I always, you know, I got to check up on him. If I'm doing something, he'll check me, you know, I'll check him if I have to, like, it's that love, you know what I'm saying, like, when we had nothing, you know what I'm saying, like, when we had nothing and we're just going through it, like, I remember I was going half on chicken, McChicken, like, before, like, going down south, like, you know, like, it made us who we were, and, like, you know, he told me things about his life, I told him things about my life, and, like, I could tell it was just genuine, you know, like, because there's a lot of people out here in Miami that just want something from you, you know, and they'll take it out of you and leave when you got nothing else left to offer, you know, but, like, with him and I, it was just different. We created a bondship, a friendship, a brother. Like, it's just, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah. And people have to understand this. One thing about it, John, because you, Trof, and Nick, because we got to get to how you met, you know, Nick as well. One thing about it, when we look at the beginnings of doing something great, we, you know, for what, you know, King
and myself do with this show, this is part of what we do because we really, 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 really got a lot of respect for the underground and the independent artists because what we do is independent. So we understand that struggle in terms of what it is in the sense of, you know, when you got to make it happen and, you know, you're just, you know, you're not necessarily super famous. You know, you're just starting out, you're trying to find your way and you're looking for people to come along, you know, who really, really, really are devoted to it as you are. People see the celebrity behind it. They see you crossing the finish line, but they don't understand the preparation for the marathon. They don't see the work you have to build, you know, to put in to build that stamina. In terms of the, especially, and some people think going to production school like Full Sail or where you went, you know, that it's just, you know, it's all about, you know, just beat making, but there's a lot more to it in terms of that nuance. You went to school for this, John. Tell us what that curriculum really is like in terms of what people have to understand going there.
Well, pretty much if you want to go to school for it, you're pretty much going to get taught everything, not just about the music, about everything else, music theory, how to set up a board, how to set up a session, how to move in a session, because that's very important. A lot of people don't get it. Like, you got to move a certain way. You can't look like you're desperate, nor you can't look like you don't care. You gotta have some sort of respect for this, because it's like, there's a lot of people out here that's willing to die for this. It's like, when you go to school, you're just taught a lot of things, even like video production, if I'm saying that right, just that, how to set up a live sound, recording, everything that revolves around music and things of that aspect, you get taught, and then whatever you like from that, you branch out and you go with what you like. There's a lot of stuff in college that they taught us that I didn't want to do. Like, I didn't care about like the video game thing, how to make a video game or stuff like that. But thinking about it now, you can always implement that into what you're doing. Like, in the project I'm doing now, I'm trying to work on a video game for it, like a mobile video game. That's going to have a theme of the album. It's going to have songs playing in the background while you're playing. So it's like, damn, like, I would have just, like, tapped in with that a little more. I could have, like, you know, done that. But, you know, it's just, it's what you get from it. It's what you want to learn.
Especially now where gaming culture done took over within the past decade, then you have a lot of these streaming sites, Twitch and all them. It's carving a new lane in forms of technology.
Facts. Yeah, I know, real shit. It's adapting. It's adapting.
Yeah. And so everything is gone.
What we also got to do on the show, too, is that we got to, since we know we're reaching out there at different audiences, we got to make that pledge to at least get one of your songs in the GTA joint. You got to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be hard. That'll be really hard.
We're pushing it out.
My music's just playing in the background.
We're here for that placement, John. So, how did you link up with Nick along the way? You know, in addition to Trop.
With Nick, I think I met him through a friend of mine, Westbrook, and Capo. There are artists down here as well in Miami. I think I linked up with them. And he started coming around the studio. We did a song. We did a couple songs. And then I do promotion at the time. I think he wanted to do some promotion for Instagram. And we just started chopping it up. And he's a very genuine dude. I really fuck with him a lot. Like, he's really putting on for the city as well. And, yeah, he started coming around the studio, and then he started linking up with Trop. Trop met up with him, started fucking with him, too, because they're kind of in the same area, A Street. So, yeah, that's kind of how that went about.
That's dope, man. And so really, and I think the one thing about it, John, that we really, really, really are
genuinely appreciative of is that what you all three formed was something that was organic, and it made it all the more genuine because and we've always seen it, you know, King having his background in journalism, you know, myself being a lifelong hip-hop nerd and reading and everything. We've observed the culture from a lot of different levels, from the 80s to now, you know, over 35, going on 40 years with it. So we see how a lot of times with people, when they link up, a lot of times it's out of a sense of convenience more than it is real camaraderie. It's all about notoriety rather than a real bond that is built. And that's where, in the worst times, we see the treachery come, because there is no real attachment other than avarice and how to get ahead in that avarice. When you look at the game of it today, John, how do you feel about the game in terms of how you see artists moving, what they're doing to get on, and how you see just the overall culture of attitude in the music?
It's a little different from when we started. Now people they're utilizing social media a lot more. You know, the TikToks, the dances and stuff like that. And so people do that. Other people kind of like go for like the clout-based things, like doing things that could get them in trouble, but, you know, it comes with a cost. So it's a lot of things. It's a lot of things a lot of people are doing to get on. So
yeah. And one thing about it,
it's good for the lame, because you'd be surprised, like, how many people, all these platforms can help your music reach out to. Like, somebody could really do a million just having a piece of their music heard on TikTok. Everything has
crazy. It's crazy.
That's
you know the Island Boys. The Island Boys blew up. They're like at 20,000, 15,000 followers, and now they're almost at a million followers. Now getting paid to do just say that and a lot of stuff. That it works, and I respect them. Even though, you know, a lot of people don't like what they're doing, but at the end of the day, that's what works. So you can't break what's not broken. You know, you can't fix what's not broken.
Yeah, and I think when we look at that, John, when we see artists like them, because on Off the Cuff, we are not here to disparage anybody. You know, we just are journalists. We just make observations. We won't get into it all about, you know, in terms of their movement and everything. But we do see it from a perspective of why people do feel the way that they do in terms of where their place is. But like you said, obviously they did something that has gotten them attention, and they have been able to parlay that into a profitable endeavor. When we look at what you all do, you know, it's the triumvirate, you know, the trio, the three amigos of dope. one thing about it is that you all, what you, John and Nick, represent is you all really have a very down-home vibe of just being regular guys. You know, you're not out there talking about, you know, we going to shoot this nigga up, or we going to bomb this, or we moving that. And we know in Miami, in terms of the reputation with a lot of those street crews like Stars Up and Zoe Pound and all those guys, how real it is out there. You know, but you guys are okay just saying, look, we're just regular guys who aren't about all the extra. We just want to be excellent in what our endeavors are.
We just want to create the art for home. Y'all could. That's the way we move when it comes to us. We just want to create art, put our vision out there, just go by business. Y'all can have the whole back and forth and beefs. Y'all ain't put me in the middle. Unless y'all gonna fight.
Yeah.
And I get paid.
Yeah, we kind of just work and stay out the way, to be honest. Like, we're not really into all that extra shit, you could say. We just, you know, just try to put the music out there. We try to do things that's going to last a very long time for generations and generations. So this is the first time me publicly announcing this, but, you know, I got a kid on the way, and
congratulations.
I'm you know,
Brett.
Appreciate that. So, you know, just I was doing it for myself and my family, but now for sure I'm doing this for my family. I got to make sure everyone's good on this side, and, you know, just that's my goal. It's just work and get out the way. And, of course, you know, when, like, if things do get extra, like, I probably wouldn't have to get my hands dirty, but that's not things I look for, you know. I just try to, like, just focus on what I got to do and just, you know, just lay low. Stack up and lay low.
Appreciate that, man.
Man,
look, there is no greater gift than being able, you know, to, you know, give that gift of life. You know, congratulations to you and your wife in terms of what y'all are, you know, going to bring into the world in terms of your offspring, man. When we look at the music that you've done, because you have a lot of songs that really, really speak to the vulnerability and, you know, the candor of human behavior and emotion. I mean, songs like, you know, Heartless, you know, The Jump, Bad Habits, you know, Difference, I mean, Trust Issues. And, of course, we can't forget Too Personal with Brooks. Tell us about when it really started moving for you in terms of when you really started hitting that creative stride and when you what was the motivating factor behind some of that work that I mentioned?
So if we're taking it all the way back, I was just working on music, and I tapped in with an artist named Big Lowe's. He produced a lot of records, Lil Peep, Fat Nick, I think Puya, like, he's worked with a lot of people, and I was working a job, I was working a 9-to-5 in downtown, I was doing maintenance, cleaning, like, my mom's job and stuff, because she was doing property management, so, like, the property she was managing, I had to clean it, and I kind of just wanted to, like, I wanted to really, like, focus and try to, like, put a little more effort, because I was working, and I was putting in effort, but I felt like I needed that cosign, and Big Lowe's at the time, and still is, he got a name behind himself, you know? So I bought a beat off of him, and I remember I was writing that at work. I was during lunch. I was sitting in front of the building just writing that verse and this and that, and going to the new studio that I just got, because, like I said prior, I wanted Trop to run a studio with me, so we had one in the front where we're at. But then it got closed down because of some bullshit we had with another business partner we had. So we opened another one in the backside of the same building, and it was freshly new. So, and this was kind of, I think, the same time Views came out. I'm not sure. Or probably a little, like around Views, like, and before Views, like a little before Views. And someone that was working on my job, his name's Warlock, he wanted to manage me, so he was putting me onto game and how to do things and this and that. And when I did the song, I got someone to do the cover art. We got the cover art done. It dropped. And I have a boy from Atlanta. His name's Curtis Williams, my brother. That's the gang right there. He's part of 2-9, when 2-9 was a thing. And I sent him the song. He was messing with it, and he reposted it on his SoundCloud, and the song blew up. Like, not blew up, but it made some traction, and he posted on his Twitter as well, and then out of nowhere, DJ Booth, a blog site posted, and I didn't know what that was. And the manager came downstairs while I worked. He's like, bro, DJ Booth posted you, bro. I'm like, yo, who is that? He's like, bro, that's a big blog.
Oh, shit.
I was like, yeah, I didn't know that. And I was like, all right, bet, cool. And bro, kid you not, that song was doing like 5 to 6K a day, and that song's almost at like 200,000 right now on SoundCloud. And when that hit, when I hit 100, when I hit like 50, 60K, I was like, yo, this is crazy. I was hyped. That's the most viewed song I ever had. It was like the, you could say the first professional song I probably did, because the other ones was dope. I had a mixtape that I just found that's still online on Baptist, and that was me recording in my room, my stepdad's house and stuff, just like kind of doing remixes and stuff to songs that I like, and not really taking it seriously, just having that dedication and passion towards it that, damn, this guy really likes what he's doing. Like, if he keeps bettering himself, he could be somewhere and get better. I was at that era, and that happened since, like, my first song where it's structured well, the lyrics was dope, like, and, yeah, when Bad Habits dropped, that shit took off, and I was like, damn, I should do a project. And then the project was Bipolar Mary, and that was kind of like, when you look at the cover, it's like Normal Me and then me with the shades and the chain on. So it's like, my last name is Mayer, M-A-H-E-R. And so it was kind of like, do you want to be the rapper? Do you want to be a regular person? So I put those two together. And it was kind of presenting like, yo, this is both of them. This is John Austin and John Mayer, you know? And yeah, so I just put that tape together, and that tape did pretty well. And when I seen the results from that, I was like, damn, like, I could really do something with this, just besides me just talking about what I feel and what's going on. Like, I could really help people and help resonate with their feeling and what they're going through in life. Because I had people, I talked about my ex, I talked about family issues and just what I was going through in life at that time.
That's dope, because... we're just listening to you, John, saying all of this. Once again, King and myself have such a deep appreciation for what you do, because you spoke about, you know, you were, you know, at the 9-to-5, you know, because, and once again, we can relate to this. We're just two regular guys who, until, you know, that bag is blessed upon us, and we don't do it for the money, because we love what we do. We both work regular jobs. This is something, this is our passion. We love it. And we can appreciate anybody that really talks about the virtues of hard work. And we, I guess I would say struggle, but, I don't like saying struggle, because struggle can entail so much in terms of really, you know, a very arduous endeavor where there's no guarantee behind it. But I'll put it like this. Before you get into the spotlight, you know, you're in the shadows, if we can say it like that. And you acknowledge that there is work behind the scenes that people don't see that gets you to the place where you are now. And I think sometimes, you know, King and myself, the hundreds of guests we've had on this show, me and my brother, we talk off air and on air about it. Social media has just, you know,
it was a game changer.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's
people could act like they're someone and they're somewhere when they're really not.
Speak on it. Go ahead. Go with it. Go.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know. It's wild what Instagram could do, especially with the filters and stuff like that. Like, I was watching a TikTok that my girl was showing me, and this girl, she wasn't my type, you know. I'm not gonna say she was ugly, but she wasn't my type. But then, like, she put some makeup on and with a little filter on top of it, it's like, damn, you know. Like, and my girl's like, yo, this is not her. And then she did it with her mom, and it's just like they both look attractive after that. And it's crazy, because what social media could do with the right poses, the right angles, the right filters, it's a lot. They even have apps where you can alter your face and make it look something completely not. And then when, imagine you're going to hook up with a girl or do something with a girl, you pull up and it's not what you see, you're like, fuck, I'm stuck. It's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Social media is crazy, though.
That's the old Chris Tucker for Friday getting caught off guard. That's catfish right there.
Yo, it's ridiculous.
Look, you messed up. Yeah, look, King, mess around, you know what I'm saying? You get baited into catching a catfish, and then, you know, it's like you done caught out back, you know, trying to throw it back. It's like, you know, you know, but one thing
gotta
about
be
it,
a,
y'all,
it's like you got to be a gadget. It's like you got to be a specter gadget when it comes to investigating profile pictures, and especially when you get them random DMs, the people just send you a DM out of nowhere. Like, okay, what's the motive first and foremost?
Exactly.
What scam you ain't running, trying to run?
You know, King and myself being veterans of this game, in terms of especially seeing stuff online for some years, we've seen how the fraudulent hustle has developed over the years, you know, in terms of those phony profiles back in the day to where it is now. We'll get into that in a second. But when you talk about the when we all discuss the aspect of social media, from an artist perspective, from those academics, it gives an artificial sense of achievement and entitlement. You know, a lot of these artists think that they get social media famous and they can circumvent the process of really putting in the process to get progress. This is not easy, you know. Journalism, for what King and myself do, is not easy. What you do, what Trop does, you know, what Nick does, it is not easy for y'all. Y'all are great at it, but it's not easy in terms of the process that it takes to get where it is. What do artists have to understand, John, in the game about what it means in terms of the hard work you have to put in and the sacrifice and having a vision and direction of what you want to achieve and accomplish?
Consistency and persistence and self-discipline, I feel, because there's going to be a lot of people around you that's going to, you know, they're going to shoot down the dreams because they probably don't believe in themselves like that. So when you're telling someone, oh, I could feed my family for the rest of my life, nah, you can't do that, like, because they probably don't think they could do them themselves, you know, and just staying consistent with the vision and the dreams of getting things done and making sure that what you got in front of you is what you're gonna grab and not just let it like fall away from you. And it could be a lot sometimes, especially when you're beginning, when you're starting up and first getting into it. You're how am I gonna promote this? Like how do I upload my music and how do I get it to all these people? How do I even, like, make a good song and stuff like that? And that could be opinion-based, but when it comes to good music. But it's just pretty much you gotta find your niche and make sure that you network with the right people and just be a good person. Because at the end of the day, like you guys said, we're all human beings. We're normal people, you know what I'm saying? Just because someone probably got more money or a little more fame or more, like, credibility in what they're doing, you know? Like, if you're just a good person, they're going to feed off of that, and they're going to want to be around me. Someone taught me, Brooks, he taught me that if you're always caring, giving, and always that bright spirit where someone always wants to be around you, when there's an opportunity for them, they're going to want you to be around them because they feel good around you. They feel safe, you know. So that could bring you into a whole other room that you never thought, and it could really change your life. So it's how you perceive things and how you execute things. And if you do it right, you know, like Ross said, all you gotta do is be right one time.
Now, saying that wisdom from the boss, Ross, you know, the mayor of Miami, you know, the head man of MMG, you know, and of course, shout out to Whole Slab as well. Have you met Ross personally and got to chop it up with him?
Nah, I haven't. I haven't met that crew yet. Haven't met them yet. They move a lot.
It's coming.
They move a lot.
It's coming.
There's opportunities, you know, but it's just time timing schedules be hectic, you know, and Chop be moving around so much, you know. So it's just like, you know, time will come when everything's meant to happen, and I don't like to force things, so.
Yeah. One thing you said, too, John.
The fish come because the universe is too big.
Absolutely. And you just speak it into existence. One thing you said, too, John, that really resonates because, you know, for what we do here, we have been blessed to interview legends, you know, and we, you know, we in addition to the legends, all the guests that we've had, whether they were known or not known, one thing like King has always said, and I've always echoed and agreed, you know, and behind him was, we don't care who you are coming on the show because we're going to respect you. We see what you put in, and we are appreciative of what you do and appreciative of the time. And this is for all the guests we've had past, you know, and future and present with yourself. We're appreciative of the time that you give us because we want this forum to give all artists who come on, no matter who they are, a forum to tell their story.
Okay. Bye,
and to, you know what I'm saying, you know, tell about their vision. And what you said, John, really resonates about what you said about people being comfortable with you. Shout out to Judah K., you know, Ross's road manager, because without him, we would have never got to interview Trout because he asked us a month back, you know, when I hit him about, was there anything we could do to help the crew out? And he was like, well, you know, I got this, you know, guy, Trout, you know, he's coming into the game, you know, in terms of he's really, you know, making his name with the family, and we want you to interview him. We were like, shit, tell us when. And, you know, and after we talked to Trout, you know, had a great interview with him, we asked Trout the same question. Is there any peoples you know that, you know, you're trying to help get out there? And he mentioned you and Nick, and we were like, you know, took a minute, but we got y'all on. But we were always going to make that happen, you know, and we did. But you don't get those opportunities, like you said, John, unless people are comfortable in reference to you being in that circle directly or indirectly. You know, this business is something that we're going to just keep it a buck, man. It's cutthroat as fuck. I mean, King is in touch with a lot of people. He could tell you some stories more than I could, you know, in terms of what he has heard about.
Save some of these dudes from a hit with a bus, and they still backstabbing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, sheesh, man.
And I even forget so, about it, too. Then that brand new, when they get their bag up, they like, man, we don't know this dude. We don't know Off the Cuff Radio. But yeah, when they record Brick, hey, man, can you give us some promo for the new mixtape coming back? It never fails.
Well,
no, it is.
Or when we got a certain other station out there to be watching what we do, you know what I'm saying?
They know who they are.
You know what I'm saying? And they started acting funny style with us. But you know what? We keep pressing on. Taking it back to Bad Habits, John. Once that really started picking up, when you really saw that it was really resonating with people, what direction did it really go for you in terms of those opportunities that opened up for you after that, especially with DJ Booth? Now, I'm not totally familiar in terms of all of his achievements, of which there are many, but I do know Booth is a big name down there. So when you got that in rotation with him, you did something pretty damn incredible with that. You know, to get a legend like him, to promote it, to really prop you with it.
Well, it just, when I seen the numbers going up, it kind of changed my perspective and, like, what I had to do, because I didn't have no marketing or nothing like that. And when they posted me and they did a write-up about me and all that stuff, I was just like, okay, so this is, what is this? And then my manager's like, oh, that's publication. This is what you're going to need. When you drop a song, it's not just dropping a song and hopefully it blows up. You got to put money behind it. Scare money don't make money. You can't spend money. You can't not spend money to expect money. Like, you got to really, like, it's all this behind the scene. Yeah, you can make music and drop it, but the business behind it has to be right. So I was just like, oh, shit,
right,
okay.
Right.
So I, once I started doing that, when I realized that, I was like, okay, so all right, so I got to drop a song beforehand, make sure I get curators for playlisting, make sure I got some DJs in the strip clubs to play it if it's a banger like that, get publications going, so when I drop a song, they post it, they write about it, and just start creating a buzz, linking up with friends that, that do music too, that got some buzz behind them, because I got a few friends out here that got a name for themselves, so they show love from time to time. And just, you know, just build that network, you know. So, like, when you do drop a song, and like I said earlier, if you're a good-hearted person, you're a good soul, and good person to be around, they're always going to support you. They know you mean no harm, and you're good. You're someone they want to be around. So, oh, homie dropped his song, let's show some love, you know. Yo, check out the boys, you know, check out the boys' song or something like that. And it just, when you start seeing that, you start seeing numbers kick up and stuff like that. Like, with that habit, I still average, like, almost 2,000-3,000 plays a day off of that. Just, like, and it's
wow.
Crazy. And the song's old. That song's like, man, like 2016. So it's just like, anything, you know. And now it's not my favorite song, you know, because, you know, you as an artist, you always got your favorites, and they don't turn into your favorites anymore after you create like another 5 or 10. But, you know, it's just consistency. And then that's from that, I had a boy. He started getting buzz. He was signed to C9 down here. I don't know if you guys heard of the crew Raider Clan. They're big down south. And they kind of, one of their members, Denzel Curry, made his own group called C9, and he signed someone named Yoshi. And he was showing me love on his SoundCloud, his platform. And I started, you know, gaining more attention from that. And then just, you know, and branching out from there and meeting bigger people that I started working with, because I engineer as well. I run the studio and I engineer, so I'd be engineering for people like Ronnie J, Ski Mask. I once did Made in Tokyo, Jack Boy, Maddox, a good amount of people. So it's just like their fans want to tap in with me because they think, oh, they see me sometimes as an engineer when I'm with them, so they follow me to be like, oh, let me see if I can get some behind the scenes with them and stuff like that. That's how I usually be growing my following. So it's crazy.
Yep. And like you said, it's just important to have that team behind you that's going to help you move in areas, you know, where, because the song, you already achieved something with that, because, you know, with your song, it had an organic growth, which means it was a genuine build, you know, and that's when you know it's really, really great, because the song stands on its own merit in terms of what it is. It doesn't need any fluffer. It doesn't need any type of facelift in terms of, you know, because shameless plug for one of my all-time favorite shows, Nip Tuck, you know, that was set in Miami. Shout out, you know, Dylan Walsh and Julian McMahon, who were the leads in it on FX. Great show. It's been off air now for some years. But it doesn't need any cosmetic surgery. You know, it's perfect the way that it is, and it does what it's supposed to do. Now, one thing about it is you also did an interview some years back, you know, with 6C, you know, 7 Steps to Build Greatness. Tell us about that and how you formulated your path on a really, establishing your strategy to success.
It's just kind of like, being a resource for everyone that you feel like needs it. So, like, I'm an artist, but I know I can engineer and produce. So if I meet an artist, I engineer and produce. If I meet a producer, I engineer and rap. If I meet an engineer, I produce and I rap. Because some people feel intimidated when you tell them to do the same thing they do, and then it starts, the ego start popping off. So you kind of want to let them know, like, in a safe zone, hey, look, I'm not in your lane right now. You know, you might find out, but I'm willing to help you out, whatever you need. And then as time goes by, like, I work with my boy Ronnie J. He told, bro, you rap? You rap, bro? I didn't even know that. Like, clients even ask him from time to time, oh, you rap, bro? I didn't even know it, you know, because you just don't want, you don't want to be working with someone. And if they're not good, they're like, damn, my engineer's better than me. I'm making music. So it's just like you kind of like want to just stay in your lane at certain parts of your life, not your life, but like at those time frames, so you can build that. It shows in the long run. Like, damn, Brody could have told me he made music, and he knows he's good, but he didn't do that because he wanted to bump my confidence up. He wanted to help me out with what I needed. I'm an artist. He didn't tell me he was an artist. He told me I'm an engineer and producer. I could pipe you up. I could help you out. And that goes a long way for a lot of people, you know? And I learned that. I forgot who I learned that from. But it's just, you're giving out your resources because there's a lot of people that need it. I need it too, you know? So it's just like, you just need to, like, be humble and just kind of, like, just show love. Show love and support, because everyone wants support. Everyone wants and needs support, and it doesn't cost the support, you know. So
that's real. That's from the heart, man.
Yeah.
In terms, we talked about you from the artist perspective.
Had a bounce for a second, yo. What did I miss on the bill?
Oh, no, man, we were just talking about, you know, his keys to wisdom, you know, and just about just, you know, what it means to have a network behind you in terms of people, you know what I'm saying, who really are going to, you know, how those connections you build can really help put you in a position to win. You know, I was just, you know, shouting out, you know, Jeter, you know, and Trump, you know what I'm saying, for facilitating this to happen, you know, so, yeah, I mean, so it's, but it's all about your connections that make the connections. You know, now, John, we gotta go on the other side of what you do dynamically, because we talked about your awesome array as an artist, but we gotta get into your painstaking craft as a producer engineer. Who are some of the artists that you look to and admire their work in terms of how they engineer their sound and, you know, create the sonic atmosphere for their work? Such as Kanye or Mike Dean. Who are some of your favorites in that pantheon of greats?
I could say Kanye for sure, one of the legends. Probably Pharrell. I wasn't into him when I was young. I just knew him. Yeah, for sure. Kanye, you know. Pharrell, Drake. Just the way he could just talk on the beat, and you don't have to throw ad-libs or dubs or backgrounds or none of that. He just says one ad-lib every, like, four or five bars, and it just, you know, just, it's the structure of the song. It's like learning from them, and then, how he samples and the instruments he uses and stuff like that. And Pharrell, how he uses different sounds to implement other instruments, and it's just, it's crazy, and you mix all that together, you can create something special.
Yeah. You know, one thing about it is with those guys, because all of them, you know, of course, Mike Dean, for those that have not read Jay Prince's book, The Art and Science of Respect, go pick it up. You know, we respectfully call him the old man. He gave a lot of wisdom and a lot of great stories, and he talks about how Mike Dean, you know, came to rap a lot. Of course, with Kanye, you know, when we look at it simply from his artist catalog, I mean, you know, he's come a long way. you know, when nobody believed what he could achieve. Same thing when we look at Pharrell, and that's special for me because of my hometown, Virginia, Hampton Roads. You know, Pharrell, it took them a while, you know, with him and Chad, you know, to get on as the Neptunes, as we know them as. But it took them a few years. But they, when they finally blew, they blew. Everybody knows them for Super Thug, you know, that they dropped with Nori back in 98. But they had a lot of other stuff, you know, like the Right Here Human Nature remix. That was Pharrell on that SSWWUV. I want to say that they produced that or had a hand in it. And also on SWV's, you know, third album. You know what I'm saying? They were pretty much, you know, they had a song called Use Your Heart. And they produced that. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't know that until I looked at those credits. So they have really, 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 like, you know, they, all those guys have come a long way, you know, in terms of what they've done.
Yeah, they came a very long way, I'm not going to lie. And you hear it now, like, those signature things, like with Pharrell, he does the what's it called, in the beginning of the beat, it repeats, it stutters in the beginning of all his beats. Most of his beats, they do that little stutter in the beginning, and then the beat starts to play out like that. Like, it's just things like that. You gotta create that, how can I say, something that, like, you know how Drake, he has that ad-lib, like, yeah, or Lil Wayne has the lighter spark up, stuff like that. You got to create something that when they hear something, they're like, oh, damn, like, I know who did that, you know? And then sometimes, like, you just co-produce or you're executive producing something, and you feel like, damn, is he a part of that? It sounds like he'll do something like that. And then you're like, no, but he's produced by that. But then when you look at the credits, you're like, oh, shit, he is. He did this part of the beat. He did this part of the song, you know? So it's a lot of aspects to it, a lot of ghost producers and writers.
Yeah, and before I get ahead of myself, because I got to make an editor's notice, it's SWV's second album, New Beginning. It was released in 96. You know, sometimes I had a brain fart on the show. I'm known as T-Max. You know, King Sandman Chinchilla called me T-Max with the facts, but even I can, get it faxed up on the wrong way sometimes. But, yeah, but I do remember Use Your Heart for a song specifically that the Neptunes did produce on that album. And also, too, John, another track that they did that really, really, I was shocked when I heard it. Have you ever heard Scarface's The Fix album?
Which one?
Hmm?
Which one?
Scarface's The Fix album.
Scarface. Yeah. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, there's a song up there called Someday with Faith Evans singing the hook, and the Neptunes did the track for it.
Who, for Kanye?
No, for Scarface.
Oh, Scarface? No, I haven't.
Check out that song called Someday. It's got Faith Evans singing the hook, and the Neptunes did the beat for it. When I saw, because I heard the song first, and then I looked at the credits and it said the Neptunes, and I was like, whoa. And when I, because it had that Neptune style to it, but, you know, you just want to make sure it's them, but it's like, when I heard, I was like, yeah, that's them. A matter of fact, Common, when he did Electric Circus, you know, Come Close, you know, they did it for that, you know, exactly, King. It shows their range. What would you say your style is in terms of how you set your instrumentation, John, and your arrangements in terms of your melodies, your hooks, echoing, your reverb, you know, how you filter it in terms of digital or, analog. Thank you. Yeah, I was struggling with it for a second. Digital or analog? Tell us about the process.
process pretty much when it comes to the production side of things. It just depends on how I feel and what I want to talk about. I kind of like try to find production from there. I create from scratch. I get influenced by a lot of songs sometimes that come out, and I'm like, damn, I like that production. That kind of fits with what I'm feeling, or damn, I could probably use that in the near future. And when it comes to just like the reverbs and stuff like that, it also ties into like how I'm feeling, because like if it's a slow song, you want the reverbs and the ad-libs to drag out a little more. If it's up tempo, you want it short and sweet so it doesn't like clash with your vocals and the beat and stuff like that. So, and like influence wise, you could kind of say Drake again, because he just keeps it. He doesn't do too much. He wants to let you know what he's saying, but he does it melodically. He does it with his with the rhythm of his cadence, his flows and stuff like that. But he's saying some shit on there, so stuff like that. Biggie Smalls, you could say. Him rapping on a beat is just gritty. So I kind of like I like mashing the two, because you know Drake has that melodic good feel vibes, and then Biggie, he'll just say some shit where it has his face going like, ugh, like, so it's just kind of like hearing both of them, I want to kind of clash them together, so, yeah, it's just, and then with and of course, like, Biggie back in the day, they were working with Analog, so it was like rough around the edges, like, the quality was good, but it wasn't where it's at right now, but, I don't know. I just like when I'm making music, I just like them to hear what I'm saying mostly. And if it's something like where I'm going slow, like too personal, stuff like that, I kind of like work. I play with the reverb, the delay, put a little auto tune on there, and just whatever feels good, to be honest. Like, that's what I try to strive for. Whatever feels good at the moment, I go with. And I try to not do too much too, because like.
I was gonna say this too.
Now you work with a pretty good resume of artists. We're talking about Smoke Perp, Lil Pump, Jack Boy, Young Sammy, Curtis Williams, Quentin Miller, Tory Lanez. Now this is probably the first radio interview that we're going to actually be talking about Tory Lanez, aside from the whole incident everybody knows about. Now, what was it like working with him?
Well, working with him, I didn't work with him personally, but I was on a song that he was on with Lil Pump, and I met him a couple times. I went to his house before. He's a good dude, bro. With that whole thing that happened with Megan Thee Stallion, I don't know what was really going on with that, so I don't want to, like, you know, put my input in that, because that's not my place. But, like, just based off the times that I met him, he's very genuine, he's cool, and, like, he goes out of his way for people. Like, yo, bro, you good? You need water? Everyone good out here? I bet. I'm going to go back to recording. You know, so it's just like, because I work with Ronnie J. Ronnie J is a producer slash artist, and now he's DJing for Roddy Ricch. And Ronnie kind of put me in a good amount of positions. He took me to L.A. A few months ago. I went to Dre London's house. I met him. Kind of got the back scenes of how the industry is. Because, you know, I don't know if you guys know Dre London. He manages Post Malone, Tyler Yahweh, and Tyga. And he sees what the fans like. Obviously, artists do too, but he's on the business side of things, so he knows what works. Yo, we gotta structure the song like this. We gotta do it like this. We gotta do it like that, because it's just like he's very in detail with that. So when Ronnie took me out there, I kind of like was like, oh damn! Like, he opened my eyes to a lot of things, like with the pre-hook, the hook, the verse, keep the verse short, then the pre-hook and the hook again, like keep the fans intrigued and remembering words and stuff like that. I learned a lot from him, so, and just in the span of, like, 4 or 5 hours, so, it's crazy, like, fucking crazy.
Yeah, the reason why I asked that, man, because what made me really observe Tory's talent was he dropped that Daystar project, which was incredible, because his back was against the wall with a lot of people mad at him. Everybody was on his neck, and he ended up putting out possibly the best project of his career in every 5 years.
So talent was there. It was just a matter of him really pushing that line to where he can really get it heard out there. And he showed it off on that one.
Yeah. Hey, he's not scared, bro. One thing I can give to him, he's not scared. Anything that he's doing, he's trying. Like that whole project he dropped where he sampled all classic songs, he did that. NFTs, he tried it, he succeeded in that, he did that. His new project that he's doing was all like that old school vibe. I think it's like 70s or 80s, like just that good feel stuff. He's doing that. Like, he's not scared to try new things. He knows what he's doing, you know? So I give him a lot of props and respect for that. Like, I really do. Like, he shows love to people. He was on the Melk Boys. I don't know if you know about them. They're like comedians or pranksters on YouTube. He's a fan of them, apparently. He went on their podcast. Like, he shows love. He's a good-hearted, genuine dude. Just based off the times that I met him, you know? Like, when I first met him before, like, because I know his engineer, Johan, and before, like, I ever, like, met him and was able to, like, probably chop it to him for, like, a few seconds or or me being at his house, like, we're waiting at Liv, because Drake was there. He was, I think it was at Liv, and forgot what club it was, but, like, I was waiting to get in, and I'm standing right next to him, and I just start chopping it up. Hey, bro, like, I know Johan, like, you know this man, you know, yeah, yeah. He's like, damn, bro, it's cool. He's like, oh, you from out here? I'm like, yeah, I only fuck from here. He's like, oh, that's dope, bro, what you do? I do music. I also run a studio by myself. He's like, all right, like, dope, man, keep pushing, bro, don't give up. Like, you know, stuff like that. He wasn't like, oh, like, another artist, you know, like, but also at the same time, like, an inspiring artist, you gotta also understand, like I said before, how to move. I wasn't pushy, I wasn't getting sound desperate. I want some knowledge, and I just want to, like, hey, bro, I respect what you do. I do the same thing, and I'm trying to get to where you're at. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's just moving a certain way that you're gonna get these people's attention, these artists' attention, because it's sort of like, yo, I do this, yo, you want to check this out? Yo, bro, can you help me out? Oh, bro, like, you can't do any of that. Like, they're not in a position to help everyone out, you know? So they can help the people they want to help out, make sure they're really good, because they could do that. But just some random person, they're not going to do that. You got to build that relationship, that trust. Because they're working with a lot. Every artist at the positions, their back's against the wall, because they got to deliver every night, every day. They got that bag that they're asking for a walkthrough, or for a performance, or for a feature, or for this or that. They got to keep doing what they're doing to keep that there, or to keep it going up. Like, they can't just be investing into people they hardly know, and you know they gotta do their homework and research to make sure that they're not putting themselves in jeopardy to just look out for someone that just wants that benefit and nothing else.
Yeah, and King, and King, this is so appropriate. This is so apropos for what you posted on your page earlier about what Tory Lanez said about how important it is to connect with your fans and with people in general because of being a public figure. Because a lot of times, John, we see these situations all the time where we see some artists that are not always open. And we understand the business. We've met a lot of people. We're somewhat industry guys, but just because by virtue of what we do. So we talk to a lot of people in terms of what goes on. And like you said, John, you hit the nail on the head. It's a lot of pressure that these artists are under. So on one hand of it, you can understand their apprehensions and hesitations and how they deal with people. Because like you said, this is a business where – if you got the juice, everybody wants to, you know, get the refreshments of it in terms of what you got.
Yep.
So you gotta be careful who you let in the circle. But it also doesn't mean that you have to close off everybody either, because your fans are what allow you to do what you do. John, I mean, obviously, you know, you make it some moves. Tell us about what it was like when you really started, you know, meeting these big-time heavy hitters in the industry. What was that like?
It was. I enjoyed a lot. You see their lifestyle, how they live, and what they got to go through, and stuff like that. Like, it all started. I was running my second studio with Trap, and I had Ronnie J hit me up. I didn't know it. Yo, bro, you mix and master? Yeah. Can you mix and master a song? It's called 95. You're probably never gonna drop it. I tell him, yo, bro, you gotta drop this, but I don't think he will. But he's like, yeah, bro, can you mix it? Yeah, I do. At the time, I was like, yo, I got you for $50. He sent it immediately. I did it. He's like, damn, this is dope. And then he's like, yo, bro, start recording me, bro. And before I even was doing that, Chop was recording Smoke Purple No Pump before they blew up. So it was just like, it was kind of a small circle. So I was like, all right, but yeah, before they blew up, we have to go on. If you go on Chop's Twitter page and scroll all the way down or his Instagram, it's there. And, so, yeah, I was like, yeah, let's work. So he invited me to the crib, and me being naive, like, the first time me, advice to anybody that's coming up, don't do this. Like, but he allowed it. He said, let's do it, but don't do it because it might give off the wrong vibe. But the first time me recording him, I asked him if I could bring a videographer with me, like, or for a photographer. Like, you don't want to do that. Like, like, as a big artist, you're going to be like, yo, this guy just wants some pictures of me, bro. Like, come on. Like, but it worked out in my favor. Like, I just wanted casually, because that was a big moment for me. Like, yo, like, I'm working with this, you know, legend, bro. Like, this guy's a living legend. Like, he worked with Anuel, Bad Bunny, like, Kanye. He did Hurricanes. He produced a record for Hurricanes with Lil Baby and The Weeknd. Like, he has hits under his belt. And he's an artist as well, very talented. And I started recording him and doing stuff like that. And he brought me under his wing and took me around, showed me places, treated me, like, did things he didn't have to do. Give me clothes, like, designer clothes. Hey, you want this, bro? Hell yeah. Like, clothes that cost bread, bro. Like, you know, a few thousand dollars, you know? So it's just like, it's just showing up because, like, because I don't, like, with me, I don't ask for anything. Like, I just want to, like, when it comes to these big artists, I want to be a part of that because my name's on there, so I want to do the best I can. And I told them, like, bro, like, I'm here to help your legacy. Like, so I'm not going to ask you for no bread. Like, if we're going to record another artist and tell them, yo, this is what I charge for the studio session, but if I'm working with you on a relationship like that, bro, don't give me nothing, bro. Like, don't give me nothing, bro. I can hold my own. But with him, he just sees me like, all right, bro, all right, let's do it, you know? So he took me to L.A., he took me to my place, and showed me my love and continuously. And to a point where I got his logo tied, bro, because he kind of, like, low-key changed my perspective in life. And I met a lot of people through him. I started recording, I recorded Pump, like, for the first time. Like, even though I knew them way before, like, well, Pump's out right now. I recorded the song with him and Tory Lanez, and I recorded Ski Mask, Made in Tokyo. I helped him do something for Kanye. The song never came out, but, like, the fact that I was listening to a song Kanye did over his beat that hasn't dropped yet, I means a lot to me. Like, yo, you trust me, bro, and I'm not going to do anything to jeopardize that. And, yeah, stuff like that, and him taking me to Dre London's house, and then telling us, like, how everything is in the industry, and, you know, like, him asking me for advice and stuff like that. Like, it's just, it's a lot. It's a lot to, like, to soak in, but, like, when you look outside in, when you look from the outside in, it's like, damn, like,
everything
is normal people, and they need some help. They need help, and then if you're with it and you're all for it, then let's do this. So I was just like, all right, done, let's get it. And just from there to working with all these other artists and building the name and stuff like that, all that boys, even getting some following and stuff like that, all their fans want to follow me to be like, yo, what are they up to? Like, oh, let me follow this cat because he works with them. Let me see if I can get some insights of what Ronnie's doing or Ski Mask or, you know, so.
And that's dope, man. Now, when you're in a recording session, what have you realized in terms of the nuances of the artists that you work with? Because everybody has different habits in terms of how they want to conduct a recording session. You as a producer, engineer, how important is that for you to be in sync with that artist's, with their vibe and their mood to understand where they're at a particular point during a song and in a session in general?
Two things, listen and be quick. Well, three things, listen, be quiet, and be quick. Because Ronnie J was telling me that he went to a writing session in Wyoming with Kanye, and he was working with an engineer, and Kanye was like, yo, complain, because the engineer wasn't on point. And he, out of nowhere, he started being like, yo, if you don't do this by this time, I'm kicking you out. 5, 4, 3, like, bro, you imagine having Kanye counting down your last minutes being there if you don't get this shit right. Last second, 5, 4, you know, so it's just like, yo, like, and he taught me how Ronnie records fast. Like, he wants to hear that last bar he recorded, and then while I'm listening to it, record, because if I come up with an idea, you need to catch that. And if I like it, we keep going. Like, yo, I like that. Let's do it. All right, don't bring me 4 bars back. Me here now, that last bar, if it's like, get to the money. All right, play from there, and then I'm going to punch it right there. And then whatever I say there, punch it from right there. And keep, like, you got to be quick, because, like, as an artist, and the thing that I feel so grateful for, that I'm an artist as well, so I understand when you can't lose that train of thought. So you got to be quick, and that's, and this might be controversy, but, like, I feel like when you're just an engineer, you're limited to certain things. But if you're a producer and engineer, you understand the structure of things and all this stuff. And if you're an artist and an engineer, then you understand what the artist is going through, so you could tap in with them even easier. You could even help them out with this. Yo, you should say this and that and that and this. And, oh, okay, bet. That sounds hard. And imagine on top of that being a producer. Like me and Trop, we produce, engineer, and we rap. So it's just like we understand it completely. That's why we build these relationships with these artists. That's why Ross fucks with Trop heavy, like, because Trop understands as an engineer, as a producer, and as an artist. He's not just an engineer that's like, all right, this guy records this guy. Or he's not a producer, like, or a producer-engineer where he's like, okay, I get the beat, and I can figure out the beat tempo and these drops and all that. Now he's an artist, too, so he knows when to put those drops in. He knows what's going to sound good. Oh, he said that. Damn, if I put a drop right here, it's going to emphasize what he said. And then if I lo-fi this part of the beat, it's really going to resonate. And then when I drop the beat here, it's just going to hit him where it hurts. Like, it's crazy. Like, that's why I feel like Trop and I are grateful. And I have a boy down here, too. His name's Franco LaFlame. Like, he does the same thing. He runs Wave Lab as well. We have another studio there. We have 2 studios, Wave Labs, and he runs the other one with J.R. Dolo, and Frank understands that too. So it's just like you having all those aspects under your belt, it's really going to help you in the long run. And like I said earlier, if you need an engineer, y'all, I produce and I rap. If you need a producer, y'all, I rap and I engineer. If you need a rapper, or, you know, vice versa, it's just you got to benefit people's needs and be humble and genuine about it. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that's real, man, because a lot of times this is what people have to understand. When you are doing this, they are entrusting you with their work because they've already created the vision. They've already created the direction. They're looking to you to help them navigate that in terms of which way they want to go. So, and like you said, John, through all 3 aspects of producing, engineering, and rapping, being an artist, you all know in terms of where, you know, your 1, 2, 2, 3 beats go in terms of your arrangement, where the count off is, how you want it to filter out. Like you said, you're echoing. You know exactly, like you said, where the drop comes in, where it's going to really, really, really resonate in terms of send that added oomph, you know, gives that panache. There are just so many different elements people got to understand in terms of how this thing works. If we can backtrack a little bit, y'all, when we think about Drake when he first started, you know, with him and Noah 40 Shabib, you know, what they were doing years ago and about how they were coming up with, they were just coming up with a new sound that, like, nobody had really heard before. And Drake over the years has gotten a lot of grief personally. I'm a fan of his. I'm not, you know,
over, you know, I'm not a crazy fan, but I respect Aubrey for what he's done, you know, because he is really talented. And he is one of the most influential, because he's come along at that time for your generation of hip-hop, John, in terms of what he's done. Why do you think Drake resonates so much in terms of what the music has from when he started, you know, from 2009, when we really started hearing about him, all the way now to 2021?
I feel like, because he set the standard, like, in a sense of, like, where he's at. He's the guy you want to go to. And him creating his own sound, he was ahead of the curve, like, with the Little John era, like, all, you know how that type of beats were when Drake came along? It's a mix. You could say it was a mix of R. Kelly and Babyface, the way his sound is. So he created that, and people were like, damn, I like that. So when you got people wanting to hear more, you start creating the trend, because people forget, oh, yeah, he's making hits, he's making that. But little do y'all forget, like, he created a sound. That's why he's so big. Like, the whole simple melody with the just the, people forget that. They're just saying, oh, he's just making hits, or he says the same shit. No, it's the fact that those same people that say, oh, he's just making that, they're going to also say, but I ain't going to lie, that song is hard, but that's my shit. Because it's just like, he just created something where it's like, hold on, we'll send it tonight. Send it tonight.
Hold on, I'm sorry, I got an important text right now, hold on. So he just, like, him creating that, he made, he just, he was ahead of the curve, so now people are following his footsteps. So if he goes left, people are going to go left. If he goes right, they're going to go right with it. And if they don't like it, they're going to take from what they like, and they're going to add their new thing, and then that creates a whole new other genre and stuff like that. And also, Drake, he got influenced by a lot of things, but it's like, can you make it better? It's not like, oh, he did it first, but who did it better, you know? And he did that a lot. And he's the person he is now. He's the GOAT. He's that guy everyone loves. I love. I was blessed to meet him and chop it up with him. I gave him Bipolar Mare. I gave him the physical CD when I went to that club. And I don't know if they ever listened to it, but that was a moment I won't forget. And yeah, he's that guy everybody wants to meet and go to, you know. And then when you listen to his music,
yeah,
you feel like
he
knows.
Hold it down.
That's
like
the most important
has,
thing.
Yeah, hold it down like he has for almost a decade, I believe. That's commendable in itself.
And not just that, but imagine, like, Lil Wayne went to jail in 2008. He told Drake, this is you, bro. Like, you got to hold the torch. Like, Nicki's doing her thing. But, yo, Drake, this is the faces of this label's on you now. And he literally, like, took it to, like, Lil Wayne came back home satisfied, more than satisfied. Like, bro, like, that's why I love Lil Wayne, bro. Like, people don't give him his flowers because, you know, this generation don't know much about Wayne, so they just see him as, like, a skater or he's just, you know, he's washed up or stuff like that. Nah, like, Lil Wayne is a GOAT. He's a brain behind everything. He found Drake and Nicki Minaj. Nicki Minaj is the GOAT, like, besides Lil' Kim and stuff like that, you know, like, she really, like, set that to where Megan Thee Stallion or something, Doja Cat, like, everyone sees them as, like, oh, she got that from Nicki, you know? Like, because Nicki took it to a whole nother level, you know?
I'm thinking with the Lil Wayne thing, I think if anything with Lil Wayne, he fathered this era.
Yeah, he's, bro, I used to go on a website in high school, And every day, they'll have new music. Like, before, like, streaming platforms, you'll go on this website, you could download it, MP3, and they'll have all these new songs and stuff. And every day, I kid you not, Lil Wayne will have a verse or something, or he'll have a new song drop, and they'll have it on there every day. It never fails. Like, it'll be a random song, he'll be on that. Like, and it's just the work ethic. And Lil Wayne, I saw this in an interview, Lil Wayne told Drake, be comfortable how you record, don't force anything, you know? And that's a big thing for artists as well. That's why Drake's what he is now. He was comfortable his whole life recording, not like when he made it. Like, because you know how it is when you're an artist, you're pressured to do a lot of things. You got to go to the media. You got to support certain things. You got to go by certain things to get the fans' favorite and be respected. But Lil Wayne, he never cared, to be honest. Like, we could all say he did for what he wanted to do. He didn't care about anyone else. Like, you could tell the indictment. I think it was he did, like, some interview when he got in trouble, and the guy was questioning him. And then he said, yo, you know, in the real world, you can't be saved, right? And the guy's like, is that a threat? He's like, no, my bad. I was talking to myself. Like, you know, like, he never really cared. So, like him telling that to Drake and just being like, yo, be comfortable with what you want to do and do what you want to do. Don't let anyone influence you to do something you don't want to do and stuff like that. Like, that's very important. And Drake took that and ran with it and became huge, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, cause you know everybody was looking at him like, you know, he was like the corny kid coming out there. He literally morphed into the Tom Brady and just, you know, took the thing over. He took the Young Money franchise like the Patriots.
Yeah, and then the whole situation with McMill, like, that was another situation that, like, really stood out. Like, this singer body, you know, he went crazy on the mic. And, like, the way he did it, like, people just think, oh, he dropped back-to-back and charged up was cool. But it's like, nah, like, the way he did things, like, people didn't, like, I caught it. I don't know if other people caught it, but, like, before he dropped back-to-back, he dropped 3 records. He dropped a banger, and not banger, he dropped a banger in Hotline Bling. He dropped the record where it's just straight bars, and then he dropped a joint for the ladies, you know what I'm saying, Right Hand. Charged Up and Hotline Bling, 3 hot records. And then after that, it's like, yo, you can't do none of these. Here you go, eat that. And then, like, 4 days later, he dropped Back to Back, where it's like, okay, this is all that combined for the ladies, for the club, and for you, my bro. Like, it's just like, it's a state of mind that he's at. And Lil Wayne's on that. Lil Wayne never backed down. When someone tried him, he came at their throat, you know? So it's just like, that whole Cash Money, I fuck with Cash Money heavy. Young Money, Cash Money, OVO.
Yeah, and one thing about it, y'all, that was a special era to see what they were doing at that time. You know, whether you are a fan or not of that movement, people got to respect it. I tell anybody, you got to respect what they were doing. And a bit of trivia, too. Back to Back was, I think, the first diss track that was actually won a Grammy. So Drake got the last laugh on that, too. And, John, your musical knowledge is unbelievable, because you mentioned earlier one of my favorite artists. Because to me, this girl is just on another planet, Doja Cat. Oh, my goodness. She is special. That girl is special.
She's dope.
For those that have not picked up the Hot Pink album and have heard her new album, Planet Her, Doja is something. She is talented. Like, she really, really, really is talented. I first heard Move like everybody else did, but when I heard some of her other tracks, I was like, yo, this girl is like, her range is just unbelievable. Now, we got a little bit of time left, John. When you talk about Biggie, you just burst into all types of enthusiastic, effusive praise about the Brooklyn legend, Big Papa. What was it like when you first heard Big Ron?
Oh, I love Biggie, bro. Like, he's one of my favorites, bro. Like, Ready to Die and Life After Death and the Freestyle in Brooklyn and all those videos of him and Pop before they, like, you know, that situation happened.
Yeah.
And stuff. Like, he was a big influence for me. And, like, Yeah, and just like the way he just he the things he would say and the way he would sing it, and it's just, you know, it was crazy. And then like his movie that they did, like what's the movie called?
Notorious.
Notorious. That was such a great movie, and like why? Like, cause I didn't like me growing up. Like I wasn't like YouTube. I found out about YouTube like in seventh grade. So like I wasn't like, you know, I was, there's not that much stuff on there at that time. But like or not even. I was like probably three. I was in sixth grade actually. But yeah. So it's just, bro, like I started doing research on him, his life and all that stuff, and just how he came up and the things he would say and his struggle and how he came up. It was just crazy. It was ridiculous. And like watching Snoop Dogg interviews and how he would talk about Biggie, and it was just, he's something special, man. It sucks that he had to go so young.
And you know what's, yeah, you know what's dope about Big, and you being a producer, you paying attention to this, was how orchestrated and produced his last album, Life After Death, truly was. It was like the production itself had a lot of a dark cinema feel to it.
Yeah.
And you could tell that he also stepped up. He not only stepped up his bars, but you could tell that the way he approached songs had changed. Like, you listen to songs like 10 Crack
Long
Commandments.
Yes, 10 Crack Commandments, bro. The way, that's an anthem for all the, you know, the hustlers out there, bro. Like, people doing that stuff on the streets. Like, he's like, yo, I'm going to give you some game out here, bro. Like, how to, you know, how to move with that. It gives you a little insight, like, because I never, like, dealt drugs and stuff like that, you know. But, like, it's just like the way he said it, it's like, damn, it sounds like common sense, but a lot of people don't do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just he's crazy, bro. And Suicidal Thoughts and Me and My Bitch and Unbelievable, like, crazy, bro, crazy. Machine Gun.
I mean, what about,
like, that sample.
What about, and guys, what about the song that's just, it speaks testament to this day, even going further with the current events that's going on, like, you're nobody till somebody kills you.
Not till somebody kills you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Facts.
Yeah. And that was, you know, like King said, because we lived through that era. March 9th is, it's still such a, it, that's still sad to think about, because, you know, when Big first did his first official release on an album, which was the Who's the Man soundtrack in 1992 with Party of Bullshit, I mean, you just saw where it was going for him. I mean, you know, he gets a place on the soundtrack that's a classic. Then he comes back the next year on the Dolly My Baby remix with Mary J. Blige and Supercat, where he gets the verse up there. I mean, you know, and then, of course, this is 93. You know, Juicy drops in 94. You know what I mean? In the spring of 94. And then the album, you know, Ready to Die drops in the fall of 1994, of that same year. And it's like, you're just seeing the man. We're watching him literally grow up. And one thing about it, too, you know, like King said, it wasn't only the songs, but it was who he did productions with. Guys like, you know, DJ Premier, you know, Easy Mo B, even RZA. It's just so tragic with him and Pop in terms of how they had that falling out, which was really over, was really, really a misunderstanding. And then also just the fact that with both of those guys, they still had so much left to give us, and they were taken away from us before we could get that gift from them. What is the most important thing to you, like King said, in terms of what's going on with the events? Once again,
Rest in peace, Young Dolph, you know, the made man of Memphis, a living legend, gone. What do artists, and what have you learned in the game about how you move accordingly when you have a level of celebrity and understanding how certain situations, if not taken care of or attended to in a certain way, spin out of control crazy? How do you avoid those pitfalls?
Always move with security, especially if when you're in your hometown, you got to move accordingly. Like, because with Young Dolph, he had a car that everyone knew about. Like, if I imagine if I'm in Miami and no one has a hot pink or a hot yellow Tesla, and I'm driving everywhere, mm-hmm. when you see that yellow Tesla, they know exactly who that is because that's the only person with it, you know? So it's just like you got to move smart, move with security. Just move a certain way. Like I learned from Drake. Personally, he was like, I don't post things when I'm there. So like, if you, me, and King eating somewhere, and we take a picture of our food. When we leave is when we post it. So when people decide to roll up, we're already gone, bro. Like, you know. So it's just like, we just gotta move smart, man. It's tragic. With that happening and, you know, everyone else has gone due to street violence and stuff like that, like, you just got to move a certain way. And he wasn't with no one. You know, I think he was by himself, like, pulling up to his favorite store, and you just got to have security. At that stage, you just can't be by yourself. You got to be with someone at least, strapped up. You got to have eyes behind your head and just make sure that you're aware of your surroundings and stuff like that. And there's a lot of envy out here. A lot of people see where you made it, and they're like, yo, how? And when it's in the streets, people don't see past a lot of things in the streets. They just see rep or, yo, I murked this dude. Like, I got the cred now. Like, you ain't murked someone big as I did. Like, it's nasty out here. So it's just, you got to be very smart. Especially when you're in your own city. And, like, even if you show the most love and you're not, you know, because, you know, there's going to be people out there that are going to say, oh, Young Dolph, like, he probably had things behind the scenes that we don't know about, and there's probably revenge. Like, nah, it's just, you never know. He was, as what I've seen on the internet, because I don't know him or people around him, but, like, he seemed genuine, cared about his family and stuff. Like, I could be
people
a good
love,
dude
yeah.
and really have, yeah. And
people love him.
You could be
I don't think we knew how much he was loved because I always respected his hustle, man. I mean, and this man was a father. I mean, he was a husband. He was a father. He was somebody's son. I mean, he was somebody's friend, cousin. But the outpouring that came out about Dolph was just, it was touching and so bittersweet, you know, because it's like, and we're not going to get into it in terms of, you know, what people are saying about it, because, I mean, we all know the stuff that was going on with, you know, some of the problems that was out there with some people, because we're not going to say that they did it either. We don't know, but it's just the fact that, like you said, John, you got to be careful in your hometown because when we look at what happened with Nipsey, when we look at what happened with Mo3, you know, these were artists that were killed where they were from. You know, Dolph was killed where he was from in Memphis. You know, you got to move because, like you said, you got hate and envy, and you're going to get the green and you, when they decide they want to set the gang on you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, they're gonna try to take you out because that's their satisfaction, you know, in the streets. That's their satisfaction is letting the people around them know, like, yo, this guy, he ain't who he is anymore. He gone, like, he's dust now, you know. Like, that's a bad, terrible way to look at it. But in the streets, that's how some people look at it, and especially when it's from your hometown, like, that's very sad. Like damn, bro. Crazy, like it sucks. It really sucks. Like I saw, and the crazy thing is when me and Trout went to LA, mm-hmm. Nipsey just died. he just died, and we're kind of shook, like, damn, like, we're going to L.A., and Nipsey just died, like, what the hell? And I remember I was bumping his latest project, I think Hustle Movement or something like that, or...
Yeah, it was a Victory Lap.
That's my favorite song. But, like, I was playing that, Sucker Proof, like, I was playing that whole joint, gave me that L.A. vibe, like... When I'm listening to that, I really feel like I'm in L.A. Even when I'm in Miami and I play from time to time, like, I just feel that L.A. vibe, and it's just, it's crazy. Like, he really stood for what he, and he was giving back to the hood, like he was doing things, yeah. Like.
Yeah, you know, that situation was unfortunate. One thing about it, we're nearing the end. John, this has been so awesome. We appreciate you so much coming on. You know you're welcome back anytime. Once again, shout out to Trop and Jeter for making this happen. Trop, tell me, you know, Trop, you know, if you're listening, this was great, man. We love this. And, of course, shout out to Nick Garcia as well. John, anything you got moving out there that you want our listeners to know about, please plug it out. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Hey, you can find me on all social medias, John Austin, and with a C at the end. I got a new song dropping in a few weeks. Trying to shoot a video to that soon. I got a project dropping in the top of the year, in the first quarter, so make sure y'all tune into that. A lot of work's on the way with a lot of people. I got Chop on there. I got 24 on there. I got my boy Nixon on there. So I got my boy Zoot on there, Cool Boy Fresh, Frank. I got my girl on there too. So it's a lot of things in works and stuff. So just I'm hoping you guys enjoyed and hear where I'm coming from.
John, this has been great. And like I said, you're welcome back.
So
we would love to have you back anytime you want to come on to talk about what you're doing in terms of when the new project drops. You know,
anytime, man, anytime.
Man, look, God bless you, youngin. Keep doing what you're doing. Much love to you and your family. We can't wait for the baby to be born. You know what I'm saying? We want the cigars, man. Send us the cigars. We need the cigs.
Hey, you already know. I'm gonna send y'all some Cuban cigars, man. I'm gonna make sure y'all right over there, bro.
You're the greatest.
Drop me
man.
The P.O. box, and I got you.
We got you. Look, Nick got our address, and we're going to make sure you got it, too. Yeah, man. So, my brother King.
It was a pleasure. Hey, it was a pleasure you guys having me on here, man. It really means a lot.
It means a lot to us. It means a lot to us. Thank you again. I guess on that note, King, take us out of here.
Yeah, on that note, we're going to be up out of here. Tune in tomorrow night, Schoolboy Radio with me, Black Poet and Comet. And Sunday,
yep.
We're going to be doing a special exclusive episode featuring Bootleg for the Daytona family. And my man Pittsburgh Pat going to be aboard with that, so we're just going to keep it pushing. So on that note,
yep.
We up out of here. Big shout-out to you, John Austin, for chopping it up with us. And we out.
Peace.